Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second episode of Memory Card, the History of Video Games podcast edition. If you are not familiar with Memory Card, the History of Video Games, it's essentially a docuseries that I'm doing on YouTube. That's the primary way to experience Memory Card. But I also do a podcast version for, you know, those that don't have time to watch a video and rather listen to this in their car or at work or whatever might be the case. But I do strongly recommend going to watch the video version on my YouTube channel. I'm the host, Gamma Galaxian. That is the same thing as my YouTube channel, so pretty easy to go find. But today we're going to talk about the Oregon Trail, and it's a game that almost needs no introduction. So I unfortunately do need an introduction, so let's go ahead and play that introduction. Okay, so, the Oregon Trail, you've probably seen the meme, "You have died of dysentery," and that's a pretty popular screen from the Oregon Trail, so if you haven't played it, if you haven't watched anyone play it, you've probably at least seen that and have gotten the context of what that's from to at least kind of understand what the Oregon Trail is. And the best way to describe it is basically it's a really tough text-based adventure game where you pretty much die, like, every time. I played it for the first time for making the video version of this, and I died instantly. I wouldn't say instantly, but I did die. I died. So it's a game where you die. It is basically the text-based version of Dark Souls, if you want to kind of picture that. The popularity for the game, though, is really not anything new. It sold about 65 million copies, and the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, MEC, was about making $10 million a year in the 90s, according to Axios. The game also inducted in... Whoa, I completely misread that. The game was also inducted in Strong's World Video Game Hall of Fame. However, there is a bit of a sad story here, as the original creators of the Oregon Trail, who we'll talk about later in the podcast, ended up not receiving any compensation from the game, according to 74. And we'll talk about more why that is. But yeah, it's a little bit of a sad situation how that played out, but we'll get to that. So for a little bit of context on the history of the Oregon Trail, we're going to go all the way back to the 1800s to see what really inspired such a cult classic. I think it's important that we go and look at why, or what the game is based about. So after the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, Americans were eager to continue to push west, and that included Oregon country. It was a batch of wilderness that was still owned by the British at the time, and Oregon country included present-day Oregon, Washington, and parts of Idaho. Lewis and Clark went on their famous expedition west, and it was all part of a plan to hopefully open Oregon country for American settlers, but the route they took was extremely hazardous, and a trail needed to be formed to truly make it easier to get there. So enter Robert Stewart, who was part of a group of fur traders known as the Astorians, and Stewart is known as the first white man to use what is known as the Oregon Trail. It was a 2,000-mile journey from Fort Astoria to St. Louis in 1810, and took about 10 months. The first wagons to use the trail from Missouri to Oregon was in 1836, and a missionary group led by Marcus and Narcissa Whitman had a goal to reach the Willamette Valley, yet they didn't complete their quest, having to abandon it 200 miles away from Oregon. The next big note in the Oregon Trail's history came when a 1,000-people wagon train reached Oregon in 1843 in what is known as the Great Migration. They left Independence, Missouri, and used the South Pass, which is a 12-mile-wide valley, to cross the Rocky Mountains and reach Oregon. The British ended up ceding Oregon country to the United States, given the thousands of immigrants who had settled there for cheap land by 1846. So, with that bit of context, we jump to 1971 when Bill Heineman, Don Rawich, and Paul Dillenberger developed the Oregon Trail. It was originally created to teach children in school about the life of a 19th century pioneer who used the Oregon Trail. It was eventually released to the market by MEC in 1974. All three were students at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, and were student teachers. So while roommates, Rawich was creating a board game that would help his students learn about that time period, and Heineman made the suggestion that it would be a perfect application for a computer program. He said, according to the West St. Paul Reader, the text-based game was created in 2 weeks for Rawich's students. The reception among the students was astounding, and the children were constantly lining up to play it. However, after a month or two, Rawich actually deleted the game, but held on to a paper copy, which ended up being a wise move in the end. Could you imagine that if Rawich had not kept that paper copy, we would not have the Oregon Trail in our history at all? It would have been done. That's incredible to think about, because, you know, a lot of people may not think highly of the Oregon Trail or think it's some big thing, but it kind of is. It really is. In terms of video game history, it was a big deal. And so if Rawich had not saved that paper copy, it would have been gone from the face of the earth, at least in the memories of those who made it and played it. Like, that's all that would have been left. And maybe down the line, they would have been able to recreate it, but that original version would not have existed. So after spending some time in a folder in Rawich's desk, MEC added the game to its catalog after Rawich retyped the code onto a portable terminal and after receiving approval from Heineman and Dillenberger. The game garnered attention all across Minnesota until it caught the eye of a little company called Apple. The game would appear on Apple II computers, and the rest is history. Quote, "I was hired by MEC in October 1974, Rawich said. And we had a share library where people could submit programs they had written, and then the staff would decide if they were worthwhile putting in the library. So over Thanksgiving weekend, I had a cold and I had nothing else to do. I decided to bring a portable terminal back to the house, and from the kitchen phone, I connected to the MEC computer and typed in line by line the code on the printout." What a way to spend your Thanksgiving break and have a cold on top of it. Like, that is an insane thing to do during Thanksgiving, and you have a cold on top of it, and you're just like, you know what, I'm just gonna retype this whole game's code. Why not? Sadly, though, none of the three received any financial compensation, let alone recognition for creating the game. It was not until 1994 when MEC brought the three together at the Mall of America that they received some kind of recognition, and this was for some kind of like celebration event. I'm not sure what was the anniversary for it. I don't know if it was like the 50th or something like that. Not entirely sure which year that was. I don't have it in my notes, so. This is Gamma from the future, so I'm going to pull a mulligan on what I previously said. I was shooting way over with 50. What I meant to say was it was about, depending on which dates you're looking at, it had been 20 years since the original creators gave the game to the consortium But it was 23 years since the game first showed its face to players, to anybody. You can kind of pick whichever year kind of celebration that would be, but either 20 or 23 years, depending how you look at it. But yeah, so it was not 50. I was completely wrong. And yeah, we're just going to move on. But this was all because they gave the game to Mech without any expectation of being repaid. So, however, fans of the games have helped the three continue to receive the recognition they deserve, creating the game that has captured the typing fingers of many across the world. The game's popularity has gone beyond just the game itself, with t-shirts, card games, mugs, socks, and so much more in merchandise. It is insane how dedicated the fan base is for this game and how widespread the game has become in pop culture. So, Wes St. Paul did an interview with Heinemann on December 14th, 2020, and it was fascinating to look at the conversation with someone who had created such a cultural phenomenon. Quote, "The most surprising thing about creating the Oregon Trail computer program is that after 20 years, I got no recognition, but in the last 10 years, there have been numerous documentaries, speaking engagements, and other notoriety." And I said in the video edition of this that this also includes into that list of making sure you get that notoriety. However, there are two other individuals who were a part of that process as well, and that includes Rawich. Slate interviewed Rawich, and it is equally as fascinating to read. This includes him talking about the response to his students to the Oregon Trail. Quote, "We spent a week on the Oregon Trail," Rawich remembers, "and so the students had 4 or 5 days to try it out. And they were, compared to the usual non-excitement of reading about history, extremely excited to do this and fascinated by the computer." Quote, "There were times when certain groups finished their trip before the bell rang, and so kids started over for as long as they could. Once I started using this game in my classes, I got students coming in after school and lunch period and so forth just because they wanted to try it many times over." Rawich also did a Reddit AMA about 8 years ago, and I'll read off a couple questions and answers that provide an interesting look into the game and its development. The first question asked, "What is the strangest bug/error you encountered while making the game?" Rawich responded, quote, "Once some kids from Alaska wrote Mech, claiming to have a foolproof method for winning. They entered a negative number for food spending, which the program subtracted from their money, which actually added to their money. They got rich. So we quickly added an input check to all money questions to reject to negative numbers." Another question asks, "Is there anything you wanted to include in the game but had to cut due to memory limitations? Rawich's response, quote, "Not due to memory, well, maybe my own, but it would have been interesting to add a Native American viewpoint, perhaps a character who watches the wagons come into that territory." Last but not least, let's look at Dylan Berger, who was interviewed by MPR News, not NPR, but MPR News, on December 27th, 2021. You can listen to the full conversation on MPR News' website, but for now, I'll play I cannot talk today. I'll play short snippets of a couple of quotes I found interesting from the interview with Dylan Berger, talking about the representation of Native Americans in the game, which seems to echo what Rawich said as well.
"Because the game was used as a social studies simulation, the original game puts you in the shoes of settlers who were part of the process of colonialism and displacement in this country back when. Looking back, how do you feel about the way the game has approached those topics?"
"We were careful to have Native Americans as helpful or friendly. You know, we were conscious of that. But it'd be interesting to have a similar game from the point of view of the Native Americans who were, like you said, displaced. It's just something that I think is important to look at both sides to things."
And here's a quick quote about Dylan Berger talking about the fame and fortune from the game.
"I understand that you and your co-creators didn't make any money from this at all. You weren't even recognized as creators for more than 20 years. What happened there?
Yeah, I guess we kind of donated it to MEC, the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, through Don, because he worked there. You know, at that time, there were no software companies that were selling, you know, software programs, at least for education. Also, MEC was a state-funded nonprofit organization at the time. And so there really was no money to be made anywhere there. Eventually, the state told MEC they had to support themselves. And so then they started selling their products to other people. But by that time, you know, we were kind of forgotten about, I guess. They finally recognized us in 1995 at a, or 94, I think, at a Mall of America celebration of the anniversary of the Oregon Trail, because it was their number one seller, and it took in quite a bit of money. And then since then, we've done lots of interviews, and we've been on, you know, television and in newspaper articles and magazine articles ever since. So we've got a lot of fame, I guess, but in terms of fame and fortune, the fortune part wasn't there. It just wasn't to be. But we're okay with that.
Well, I'm glad that you've gotten your due. Do you have any clout with the kids that they, when they know that you created the Oregon Trail?
And I spent 30 years in Minneapolis public schools, and then another 9 in St. Louis Park, and then I was a sub. And even as a sub, just 2-3 years ago, I would tell the kids, I've got these claim to fame, you know, and so I'd mentioned the Oregon Trail. How many have heard of it? And just about everybody raised their hand, or I'd say, Google my name. And then kids would have me, you know, ask for autographs. And these are students. And of course, their parents, they remember playing the game. They'd say things like, boy, you saved my life. And in middle school, because there was one nice part of my day or something. It's just, there's a lot of nostalgia out there. And we feel good that we've reached so many people and had that much effect on people.
Now that we've covered the history of the Oregon Trail and its development, let's talk about the actual game. And although there's not too much to say, it's not a complicated game, we can still cover the basics. So ever since its release, it has been re-released several times on countless platforms, but its importance began all the way back in 1971. The game is extremely simple, but is also known for its extreme difficulty. The player is a wagon leader and has to guide a group of settlers from Independence, Missouri to Willamette Valley in Oregon. The goal is to safely travel the Oregon Trail in 1848. There are several different aspects of this game, including hunting, resource management, and keeping as many of your group alive as possible. There were several points where you must make hard decisions, and if you don't plan well enough, your run will end. There are several ways to play the game, but I opted to play using the free 1990 version on Visit Oregon's website, which also includes a history of the game that I've already used for this video, this podcast, as some helpful tips. I find it awesome that Visit Oregon has completely embraced the Oregon Trail and has a free version to play on their website. That is so cool, and I wish like more things would completely embrace, like, whether it's like a video game or movie and stuff like that. Like some things are very hesitant to fully embrace, like, not really just the meme culture, but just the fact that something, it was made based off of it. You just see too often like things wanting to push away from that instead of embracing it. And here's Visit Oregon completely embracing that, and I love it. So the game opens in Independence, Missouri, and you first get to pick your backstory as well as name your character. So it has some RPG elements to it, which is pretty neat for a really simple game for the time, especially. Like, there wasn't too many RPG stuff like that where you get to name your character and stuff like that, and your background. Not a lot of stuff was around at that time. So after picking a month to set out and buy supplies, you set off on the Oregon Trail. The interface states the date, the weather, health, food supply, how long it is to the next landmark, and how many miles you've traveled. It also pops up with any important status updates as you watch your little wagon roll across the Oregon Trail. When stopping, you have several options to pick from, including continuing on the trail, checking supplies, looking at the map, changing your pace to go faster or slower, changing food rations, resting, trading, and hunting. Oftentimes, when you are faced with a choice, you have multiple options that can result in different outcomes. This can range from like you've succeeded to somebody died. I'm not sure how exactly it's done, whether it's like an RNG kind of situation or if it's just it's programming certain decisions that you've made to result in a certain outcome. So it'd be interesting to see how that is, you know, if somebody were to go full detail on the technical aspects of it. One of the most famous aspects of the game is dying, and it's pretty easy to do. It really is. Illnesses can claim your party, such as snake bites, measles, dysentery, cholera, typhoid, and exhaustion. Players can also die from a broken leg or drowning. Oxen are also able to die on the journey, so you have set a number of oxen. And you can imagine if you run out of your oxen, you're kind of stuck, you know, so you have to take care of the oxen as well. So if someone in your party dies, a funeral is held and you have a chance to write an epitaph, which is kind of sad when you think about it, but especially when you think about like kids having to write epitaphs for these fictional characters. But I don't know, maybe it was fun. If you are able to beat the game, there is actually a point system that awards the players based on survivors, remaining supplies, cash, and the backstory you chosen at the start of the game. So yeah, the backstory actually comes full circle, and it actually does matter. So carpenters receive double points, and farmers receive triple points. So if you didn't pick any of those backstories, you know, you don't get the certain amount of points. So I imagine a lot of people that are trying to get the most points possible are going to pick farmers to receive as much points as possible. And with that, we kind of close out on the Oregon Trail. There's not too much besides the lore behind its creation. The game itself is really simple. Pretty much everything I just went over is essentially what's in the game. I mean, there's some, you know, random events that I'm not going to cover, but it is a pretty simple game. It's fun to play. It's one of those games that is very time consuming, but it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun, especially like if you're challenging your friends to see how far each of you can go, you know, or who can maybe even win. But oh, I think my voice just cracked there. It's fine. Anyway. That's going to pretty much do it for this episode. So I'm going to play the outro, and then I've got some off-topic things that I wanted to say. So let's go ahead and play that outro. So, as I said, that'll include this episode of Memory Card, the History of Video Games Podcast Edition. And again, I had an absolute blast looking into the history of the Oregon Trail. I was not expecting such a simple game to have such a backstory that it had. And that's why I wanted to do this series so much. There's so many stories for video games throughout history that really deserve to be told, and I think deserve to be told more. Like, the Oregon Trail story has been told. The beginnings of video games have been told. But I just wanted to continue to have a series that fully kind of encapsulates all of those stories and kind of a chronological order, or as best as I can do chronologically. Once we get into like the Atari 2600, it's going to be a little bit harder for me to be chronological in that regard, but we'll handle it when we get there. But that's why I wanted to do this so much, because there's so much history here that, you know, as a gamer myself, I've been a gamer for years, almost my whole life. And there's just some things I did not know that I think gamers, young and old, would love to know about, and including stuff like this. And so I just learned, actually, that I, funnily enough, actually went out of chronological order than I would have liked, because I learned about a game while doing research about the Oregon Trail called the Sumerian Game, which was technically the first educational entertainment game, or as considered to be, by a wide range of people. And I think that game also deserves to have its own episode. So that's the next thing we're going to cover in the next episode, is the Sumerian Game. It'll be an interesting one because it's not a very visual game. There's no, I looked up any kind of gameplay and there really isn't. It's another text-based game, but there's even less than some of the, like, Hammurabi. Like, Hammurabi had more footage than the Sumerian Game. So that one's going to be probably better for the podcast, but worse for the video series. So, you know, maybe for that one, listen to the podcast version. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So with that in mind, please provide feedback. I would greatly appreciate it. I am a one-man crew, and much like my mistake of not covering the Sumerian Game sooner, I'm sure mistakes are going to happen. I already had a mistake about not knowing which anniversary it was, so please provide feedback, you know, comment what anniversary that really was, you know, things like that. They're going to happen. They're going to happen, especially I'm going solo. I have no editors, nothing. I'm just doing this for fun, you know, because it's a passion project. But as always, please check out all the sources as well that I've used in this podcast. I'm going to list them off because I also learned that in podcast descriptions, I only have a set amount of characters. And so I can't list out all the sources that I use. It's impossible. So I'm going to list off the sources I use. So let me list those off, and then I will do my personal outro here. So I want to thank MPR News. I want to thank Slate, West St. Paul Reader. I want to thank Reddit's Rawitch's AMA. I want to thank Axios, the 74 million organization. I want to thank the National Park Service for providing the history of the Oregon Trail. And those are all the sources that I used for this podcast and for the video edition. And so I also wanted to say that I got a new headset, and I wanted to ask for feedback about mic quality. I upgraded mostly because of comfort. The last headset I was using was really hurting my jaw. But I do want to care about mic quality, obviously, if I continue to do these. So please let me know how the mic quality is, if it's better than the last episode, if it's about the same, or if it's worse. It'll all take into consideration whether I stay with this headset or try something else. But I mostly want to do comfort first when it comes to headsets, as my jaw was really in a bad spot. I had a lot of problems eating, so I want to make sure my jaw is taken care of before anything else. And so far, so good with this headset. It's a HyperX 3. So it's a lot more lightweight than the, I was using Astro A10. So it's a lot more lightweight. So hopefully it works out. I haven't really gotten to really try it too much. This is kind of like the second time I'm really trying it. But anyway, yeah, I hope you enjoyed listening to me ramble about the Oregon Trail. I really appreciate for any feedback, good or bad, or bad, good or constructive criticism, I'll say. I definitely take anything to heart and trying to improve as I go along with this series that is really a passion project, and I really want to make as good as possible. I'm trying new video editing techniques for the video series that I have never tried, and it's a pain to learn. But I'm willing to make this one of the best things that I can make it. Check out my YouTube channel, Gamma Galaxian. I post the video editions of essentially memory card. And I also post random gameplay of different games I'm playing. It usually just depends on whether there's content to come from it or not. The YouTube channel is kind of also just more of a hobby with my passion project as the main source of content. But sometimes if I'm playing a game and there's something that's worth the content, I'll post it. I also want to recommend you follow me on Twitch. I will live stream random games that I'm playing. I have a Throwback Thursday where I play retro games, so that might entice some listeners out there that on Thursdays I will play anything that I consider personally retro, because I know it's a debatable topic. Anything from the PS2 generation back. So basically anything from the PS2 and older is fair game for me to play. So like right now, as of time of recording this, I've been playing Ocarina of Time, and that's my first time playing through it. So that kind of gives you a little preview. Give me any kind of feedback. I am learning as I go along. Like this time I've gotten a much better outro than the first episode. So just tell me everything I'm doing wrong, and that way I can fix it in future episodes. So thank you for listening, and catch you next week as we talk about the Sumerian game.